Hey, you're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. It's hard to remember now with frost covering the ground, but on a bright summer day, you can usually look out over Puget Sound and see flocks of white sailboats. The pleasure craft of today are very different from the tall ships that were once the only connection to other continents, mostly British and Spanish schooners and galleons. Some of those old-style ships are still around, and they need regular maintenance. That includes the large, billowing sails. But there aren't many businesses that make these kinds of sails anymore. One of the last places in the world that does is right here in the Puget Sound region. Soundside producer Alec Cowan visited the family business still making tall ship sails by hand.
Welcome to our sail off.
You can find Force 10 Sailmakers down a narrow gravel road on Marrowstone Island. The business takes up the second floor of an unassuming gray building covered in moss.
Great.
Thank you.
Naja Cementi owns the shop.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Naja.
Naja.
Would you like a seat? Okay. Claim a seat. Do you want to put yourself in the middle in between?
Yeah.
Naja learned the craft from her mother and father. They don't run things anymore, but they've stuck around.
So we are traditional sailmakers.
Her dad, Wayne Cementi, points out the types of ships they work on.
See all these boats up here on the wall? They all have names like schooners, square riggers specifically, but people generically throw them under the name of tall ships.
The Cementis still make sails by hand. Much like the tall ships they outfit, they're keeping old traditions alive.
Sailmaking has changed tremendously over the years, particularly with the advent of technology. You know, right now, computers will design your sail. You can roll out the cloth. There'll be a great big thing with a hot pizza cutter that'll cut the entire sail for you, every panel. And then you sew it together and you hydraulically press things in, bang, 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 bang. This is really old school. We are one of the few people in the world who specialize in making tall ship sails.
On the walls of the sail loft hang Polaroid pictures from their travels. Old rigging hangs from the ceiling. Work tools are scattered along every nook and cranny. There's clutter, but the floors are pristine. I even slip a little as I walk around on the slick surfaces. They have to be exceptionally clean to keep the sails from getting dirty.
This type of sail making really evolved probably in about the 1700s. We draw it out. We put the design work on a piece of paper. We have an enormous floor that we'll work on. So a gymnasium floor, or for the bigger sails, it'll have to be two or three gymnasiums sort of put together. And we will chalk it all in exactly on the floor. And then we roll all the cloth to that and tick it off very carefully so we, because it has to come back into this relatively small space to be put together. Everyone is very carefully cut and very carefully labeled. Then it comes back in here and it goes into the machines and it gets seamed. So then it all gets together in one big plane. Then the patches are put in, the tablings, which you'd think of as hems, are put on, and then comes the handwork.
We're working with various weights of cloth here. So each yard weighs 1 pound, and if you can picture a square sole that's 900 square feet, that's a lot of pounds. You know, it's 300 pounds of cloth alone, and then we're adding all of the rope and all the hardware to that as well. So these sails get pretty heavy.
For some quick terminology, a square sole is a square sail. A staysail is a triangle sail, which you would put throughout the fore and aft of a ship. A combination of these sails catch the wind and also direct it.
I'm just putting two pieces of cloth together and sewing one nice long straight line. And I have to do that over and over again. On a really large sail, some of those seams can be 40, 50 feet long, and there can be 20 of them into a sail. And each seam gets three rows of stitching to it. And I've definitely spent days sitting at the sewing machine calculating in my head how many miles of stitching I happen to be doing at that time. This machine is rather old. She's also kind of like a crotchety old lady, and she, wants to be treated right. And if she's not treated right, she throws a bit of a fit. We have another machine that we use for the corners because that machine has a much higher foot. It can take thicker layers of cloth. It has a much larger needle, so it can punch through those layers of cloth with really minimal effort. One thing I have to watch out for with that machine is I'm going through so many layers of cloth, the needle will actually get hot. And if I sew too fast, I can melt through the thread with the heat that the needle generates.
So this is specifically that you're looking at is a sail that's going to go down to a museum ship called the Star of India. It's in San Diego. It's 1863 and 250 feet long. This is a probably average size sail for us. About 1,000 square feet. Staysails will be a little smaller. Then you get something like the Adventurous mainsail, which will be 2,400 or 2,500 square feet. So I don't know what it is now, but it used to be your typical home was 2,000 square feet. So picture a sail that could cover a house.
So can you tell me a little bit about your origin story with coming into sailing?
I was actually a marine biology person when I first came out of college, but I ended up going on a schooner that was doing oceanography work, you know, just worked on boats for most of my life since I got out of college, and of course worked up my way up to captain.
And of course, fell in love with boats and all that goes into them.
There's three things that go hand in hand. We call them, the Holy Trinity, is that the hull, the rig, and the sails. And so I, for some reason, who knows what, was always drawn to rigging and sailmaking. These are the real hands-on, what are all those millions of different kind of knots, splices, what's the engineering of that? And riggers are very keen to show you everything. Let me show you this knot, let me show you that knot. And sailmakers are absolutely the opposite. So I'm sniffing around, reading different books, and they really can't get a lot of that information out of books. We were sailing on a square rigger over in the Coral Sea, and so there just happened to be that a friend of the owner's was a sailmaker named George McNeil. This was in Sydney, Australia. His whole family had come over. They had come over on the first fleet as sailmakers that settled Australia. And so he was fifth generation sailmaker and known as the hand worker in all of Australia. And he said, okay, you want to make those square sails? I'll teach you how to do it. We'd go in at 6 o'clock at night and George would sit us down and say, okay, this is what you need to do tonight. You need to sew these together. Here's how this goes together. Oh, that goes to there. The next day he'd inspect our work.
Wayne and his wife, Nicole, began making sails and then they made a family. Naja spent her early life on the ocean before the family eventually settled on Puget Sound. She now continues that family legacy, teaching others a tricky craftswork that's managed to survive the centuries.
It's not only making something incredibly strong and functional, but there's also great artistry to it.
One of the final additions to the sail is a rope that runs along the edge, like a kind of fringe. That rope has to be hand-sewn through individually punched holes along the full length of the sail.
Every stitch through here, so it's, basically about 12 stitches in a foot, 120 stitches in 10 feet, thousands and thousands of stitches. All by hand.
Naja takes a mallet and hits it onto an awl, a kind of pointed screwdriver. She's punching through 10 to 13 layers of cloth.
So in this corner, we've put in a large bronze clue piece, which looks like a pair of spectacles with a big smiley face underneath it.
The clue piece lets rope attach the sail to the actual ship.
And to that, we've added these special support eyelets that get smaller and smaller as they go into the body of the sail. They look like a little constellation. But I now have to cover this beautiful, but also very strong and important handwork with a nice piece of leather to protect it. And this leather will be sacrificial, but it will cover and protect this thread both from chafe and the sunlight.
Is there a way to add kind of personal flair into that?
Oh, absolutely. I think every sailmaker around the world has their own particular way of stitching an eyelet, their own particular patch pattern they put in the corner of a sail. It's kind of like your sailmaker's signature. Some people make engines, and we make something much simpler in a lot of ways that does the same thing. It powers an entire ship. It's kind of like building a wing for a bird.
And how long does it take to make one of these?
Well, depends a little bit on whether it's a four-sided sail, a three-sided sail, whether we're going to be hand roping and all that. But as far as just hours, you could probably make one in about 2 weeks if you're dedicated to it.
This is a very large sail. It's also a fairly expensive sail. You know, these sails range anywhere from $3,000 to $20,000, depending on the size of the sail and the era of work we're aiming for. You know, a lot of the older style sails, if we're making a sail for a boat that's representing the 1700s, it's going to have a lot more handwork in it because they didn't have metal hardware. So we have to make more things out of rope for that sail. People will often ask me when they're ordering a new sail, how long will this sail last? And I can't give them a good answer because the honest answer is, how well are you going to treat your sail? Because I know some boats are going to, you know, they're going to work that sail to shreds really quickly because they just beat it about all the time. And they, you know, they set it and strike it, whatever the weather, whatever the conditions, without taking certain small cares and cautions that would make that sail last another 5 or 10 years. And then there's other boats that they treat their sails preciously, and on those boats, those sails will last 15, 20 years.
Is there opportunities to train new people to kind of spread this information and this industry and keep it alive?
I mean, right now, sail lofts have just been closing with a corporatization. I mean, there's a couple big corporate businesses that come in, and then the little lofts just close, or people retire without the heir apparent. Because it was a tradition that you always, sailmakers passed it right on down to their kids, you know. And so, Thomas Lawson and Sons, Nat Wilson and Sons, you know, this is your typical sail loft. And so, we like to think of this sail as Chimenti and Old Man, because Nasha's running the business and she lets the old man still come in every once in a while.
Yeah, she lets you stick around. After generations of practice, there's something the Chimentis have figured out that even the most experienced sailors might not know.
They haven't learned the proper care of that sail. It's just something that came with the boat, and it's something we use every day, and it's something they don't think about.
As long as it's not flapping crazy in your face or ripping out, they don't know what a good draft looks like or what a good corner looks like. And so teaching people how to look at the sail and say, oh, you see, that sail was just cut completely flat. They didn't, oh, that sail's too baggy here. Or, oh, now your sail is old.
It's a skill they want to keep alive. That's why they're always open to the idea of taking on apprentices.
One of the things about the trades that is tragic right now is trades are just disappearing. I mean, you know, you could try to get your car fixed, anything, right? Plumbers, electricians. And so, when people go to retire, thinking ahead of time, before they just like quit and put it on the market, you know, 5 years ahead of time, they should be thinking about where's that legacy going? Because there's so much to be taught. I mean, not only the business side of it, which is a little bit easier, but the craftsmanship, so that you keep this lineage going so that it just doesn't disappear altogether.
In the loft, the family circles around the sail, helping make fittings and passing off tools. They might listen to a cassette of sea shanties or an audiobook of Magellan and Shackleton's seafaring travels. The lights in the loft go out, waiting for the next ship to drift into harbor.
That was Soundside producer Alec Cowan talking with the Chimenti family about their traditional sail loft over on Marrowstone Island near Port Townsend. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.